You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, we're back from some whirlwind traveling, young lady, business, pleasure, things like that. And we're back in the zone.
Yep. Back at home, looking at the beautiful trees. And just, again, so much news, and especially on our favorite subject, the border.
Well, you know, this border crisis is, I know for a fact in my lifetime, it's the worst I've ever seen. And for the Democrats to say that there is no crisis whatsoever, we know that that's all BS. Because they may be as obstinate people and obtuse, but they're not stupid. Anybody that sees that we are being invaded in 1 month by over 100,000 illegal aliens, tens of thousands of illegal aliens, including families and children, being arrested at the border, breaching the border, our detention centers are completely overfilling, and we are also now releasing tens of thousands of illegal aliens into American society. You can't ignore this. This is all about power. It has nothing to do with the wall. It's all about power, getting these people over the border, getting them amnesty, and getting them voting.
Well, and everybody knows that, but the fact that our politicians are willing to put the American people at risk, it just appalls me that they would put Americans and our American lifestyle, our way of life, our the way that our country really operates, they put everything at risk for the American people. And I'm just so against that. And the fact that they do that, we have to be involved. People have to wake up to this, and they have to vote these people out.
You have to, as an American, you know, maybe a lot of Americans are not as well traveled as we are, but you need to go to countries in the, for instance, in the European Union to see how their cultures have been just so transformed in a negative way. They've lost their language. They've lost their culture. They've lost their society. They've lost the way that they communicate with each other, the way that they interact with each other. There is so much more decisiveness, or divisiveness rather, in their societies. Europe is a changed society all the way across the board, going into Great Britain. I don't care what country that you are visiting, and we visited most in the European Union. Europe has been destroyed. And we're going to talk about Australia in a few minutes and how incredibly changed the country of Australia is. And this is the same thing that they want to do to the United States, and it just can't happen here.
Well, unfortunately, it is happening. And, you know, when you speak about Europe, that has happened in our lifetime. And the fact that it has happened in a microsecond of historical time is really scary. There are that percentage of people that want to have a global society, and everybody can go everywhere, and everybody is just a member of the earth. You can't have a society in that way. You cannot build a safe type of working society by having everybody in and out all the time. That just doesn't work that way. And yes, it's a shame to have the cultural influences and the different cultures that were in each country in Europe were unique to each to its own, and it was a beautiful thing to see, which really is no longer. And you know, I'm not even talking about that so much, Ron, here, as I'm talking about the influx of three different things. Crime, drugs, and people that jump onto our welfare systems of all types, our schools, our hospitals, they're breaking us financially. And we, the working Americans who have, you know, put our sweat equity into our lives here in America, are the ones paying the bill.
Well, you know, people would maybe listen to our conversation tonight, and they would think, oh my God, these guys are Islamophobes, these guys are, you know, anti-immigration, they're anti-people of color, they're anti-religion, different types of religions. That is not what this is about at all.
Not at all.
You and I are both the children of immigrants, okay, from different countries. Italy and Holland for you and Italy for me. And so this is not about that. And this is not about us welcoming cultures into American society. It's not about that at all. Who doesn't love the Irish culture, the German culture, the Italian culture, the Asian culture? Who doesn't enjoy going to the different festivals and going into these, you know, these types of cultural environments and enjoying that and enjoying what these different people from different parts of the world have brought to the United States as Americans? What we're talking about is people that come into this nation illegally ahead of people who have spent years to come into this country, and then the people that come in refuse to assimilate. They do not speak our language. They do not resonate with the American culture. They want their own culture. They want their own laws, i.e. Sharia law. And now, within the United States, as you see in Europe, as you see in other continents, we have these no-go zones. And I'm going to talk about that again in a couple of minutes in Australia, because I recently saw a video that just scared the living daylights out of me. And I want to share that with you tonight in our coffee conversation.
Okay. Well, you know, I want to go back to the fact that we have a home in Mexico and we love Mexico and I have wonderful, wonderful friends that are Mexican and Russian, actually.
And I mean, from
Mexico.
All different, and Portuguese,
right.
And Brazilian.
But what we found is that the Mexican people don't want people coming over their border either. They have the same problems that we have with people coming over their border and taking their jobs, and people that are uneducated coming into their country and kind of living off their system. So this is not just America's problem. It's a problem in Mexico. It's a problem in Europe. We talked to Europeans who had the same exact feelings. But, you know, I want to give you a perfect example. So do you remember the bean lady that was on TV? She was from Honduras, and she was in that first big caravan of people that were coming over the border. And they had them all sitting there in Tijuana, and the lady served her beans.
Oh, I remember that lady.
And she said that it was pig food. And she said that you know, that she would die of hunger if she didn't eat the pig food that they were giving her. So she was pretty unhappy about her conditions, despite the fact that she came all the way from Honduras to illegally enter the U.S. Well, lo and behold, the lady did get into the U.S., okay?
Oh, so, I didn't know she came into the U.S. now.
So the bean lady lives in Dallas with another lady, and she lives with another person. So there's three ladies, okay? So the lady that lives in Dallas in an apartment who may be her aunt, and then the bean lady and her friend live there. Well, bean lady was just arrested for assault with a deadly weapon, for beating the aunt with a piece of a mattress frame, a knife, and some other blunt instrument because they had an argument about a rumor. This is what you're getting in this country. And how dare our politicians defend this? We live in Texas. I don't want this in Texas. We don't need any more violent people in Texas.
Well, you know, what we don't need as well across the United States is we don't need hundreds of thousands of people coming in here and millions. You know, there's 26 million illegal aliens here, right? And a large percent of these illegal aliens have no language skills, no job skills, nothing employable, and they can't all work in the farms, and they can't all work in the factories, and they can't all clean your house or wash your car, because that's the types of jobs that people that have no language skills, no education, and no job skills have to do. Okay, that the lowest level of labor. We can't sustain that. Okay, it's economically unfeasible. And with all the debt that the United States has, I think over $20 trillion worth of debt, who is going to pay for that debt? Not us. I mean, we're paying for it, but who's really going to pay for it? Our kids and our grandkids. And what really bothers me amongst many things of these politicians, to be quite honest with you, on both sides, I call them the Republicrats, they want the status quo. And they're not going to be paying for it. Okay, they don't pay for anything. They're the rich ruling elite. It's going to be our kids and grandkids that pay this horrendous debt for the rest of their lives. And the United States, we just can't sustain it. And they're already seeing that in Europe, where these countries are going bankrupt trying to subsidize these illegal aliens.
President Trump has now requested the resignation of Kirstjen Nielsen, which he received. And so we will have a new head of the Homeland Security Department. So, you know, there's some questions about that. I actually liked her. And one of the things that she had complained about, or actually she didn't complain vocally about, but that's kind of behind the scenes, is that President Trump was asking her to close the borders, was asking her to do things that she really was prohibited by law to do. And that kind of made him upset. So she is out, and I think his name is McAlane is in. And so that's where we're at now. And he's a little bit more hardline. And let's see what happens with him.
Well, you know what? Let me talk from a cop's perspective, because that's what she is, okay? Or and by the way, I thank her for her service too. What a challenging, difficult job that this position has, okay? Because she couldn't go out with her family. There would be threats. There was harassment, 24/7 people camped outside her house. They would follow her into restaurants. She and her family couldn't eat. They had to have additional security. I mean, that's not what you go into governmental service for. And anybody that is in that position has to be aware that that's what's going to happen to them. However, that being said, she was a little bit milquetoast, and you just can't be that way. President Trump is not a milquetoast. These are issues that are serious issues, and you need a very strong personality to be in that position. She would go into these Senate meetings and congressional meetings and hearings, and they would just beat her up. You need someone that'll look them all in the eye and take every single one of them on. Do your homework. Every single one of these Congress people has got serious baggage, and you need to bring out how when Obama was president of the United States, they had supported his anti-immigration policies and his deportation policies. And now, because it's Trump, it's the other way around. They do not want to give President Trump a victory on protecting America from illegal alien immigration.
Well, that's absolutely
correct. And you got to be tough. You can't sit back there and take it from these people.
And the same thing with our courts. Our courts did not stop Obama from doing all the same things that President Trump is trying to do. But every which way he turns, President Trump is stopped by some federal judge who says that what he's doing is not legal.
And again, people have to remember, when President Trump asks you to do something that, is not, you're not legally able to do, he's not a politician. We did not hire President Trump to be a politician. We brought him in to be a leader and a person who affects change. And I'm telling you what, He's just like us, Linda. He, you know what we both say. You know, if you're obstructed, you go through it, you go over it, you go around it, you go under it. And that's what he consistently tries to do. And some of the things, yeah, there's a law or a couple of laws that don't allow you to do it, but that's not going to stop a good leader when he knows that there's something wrong with our nation to try to fix it.
Yes, and it was her job to do just that, to go under it, over it, around it, to find a way to make what needs to happen happen. And since that didn't happen, she's out and somebody else is in. I agree with somebody like Tom Heyman, who I have the utmost respect for.
I love Tom.
Who I think, you know, he is one of those people that when you come at him, he's got the facts right there and he knows right how to put it right back to you.
And you know what? This goes for every member of Trump's team and his cabinet. You cannot be reactive. You've got to be proactive. And for all my respect for former DHS Secretary Nielsen, she was reactive. Okay, she would get punched left and right, and all she'd do is sit back there and take it. You can't do that. You've got to be just like President Trump. You've got to be proactive. You've got to have more than just a few statistics in front of you. You've got to have a more assertive personality and let these people know that you're not going to take any crap from them. The best defense is a good offense, but you can't have a good offense unless you're proactive.
Right. And, you know, I just want to go back for one second to Bean Lady. I would like to know how she ended up getting into this country.
And, you know, I'd like to know if she was subsidized in this country. Is that Section 8 housing? Was she on EBT cards? Was she on welfare, on food stamps? Was she getting free medical care? Just how was she living in, where was she?
In Dallas, Texas. Yeah.
Okay, just how was she doing that?
Yeah,
all right,
I don't know.
And if she was subsidized, just take that and multiply it by millions of people. And then you understand why our criminal justice system is broken, why our immigration system is broken, why our, if I didn't say it, criminal justice system is broken, why our school system is broken, why our social service system is broken, and why our welfare system is broken. Well, young lady, how about a first cup of coffee of the evening?
I'm ready.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, Linda, you know, I mentioned earlier that we're talking about changes in culture. And yesterday, one of my colleagues sent me a very disturbing video, and it was from the country of Australia. And in this video, there was a female journalist with her film crew, and she had heard that there were no-go zones, Muslim no-go zones, in Sydney, Australia. And so she took her camera team, and they drove into the no-go zone, and they started walking down the street, obviously to confirm whether or not it was a no-go zone. And what does that mean? A no-go zone is a place where you're not supposed to go. All right.
Right.
If you're not Muslim, if you're not a strict Islamist, if you don't believe in Sharia law, then you shouldn't go into these areas. But by the way, this is inside the city of Sydney, Australia. Okay. And so she was just trying to find out whether there were, in fact, these no-go zones. So she starts walking down the street, and within a couple of minutes, she's immediately engaged and actually detained by a law enforcement official. And it wasn't just a street cop. I looked at the epaulets on his shoulder boards, and he was at least a captain or commander. And you know, I'll have to look up the constitutional rights of Australians, but I'm pretty sure that you can't have an unlawful detention where people tell you, where police officers tell you that you can't do this and you can't do that, when all you're doing is walking down the street with a camera and interviewing people. All right. And it was both amazing and scary, because he literally detained her and was sort of suggesting that she couldn't go someplace, or she said, look, I just want to walk down the street with my camera crew. I want to interview people from time to time, and I'm thinking about going over to a mosque. And he said, you know, absolutely not. You shouldn't do that. I'm warning you that something could happen to you. And then he started inferring that if she did go down the street with her camera crew, and if she did go to a mosque or even stand in front of the mosque, she could be in violation of their disorderly conduct laws in Australia. And I'm trying to figure out how she's possibly in violation. So, you know, being a cop and listening to another cop talk, I'm saying, okay, wait a minute. He's spitting over the line here. This is an unlawful detention, but he's trying to word it in such a way that it's not an unlawful detention and he's not prohibiting her. But being a smart journalist, she pushed him and she said to him, well, wait a minute, are you telling me that I can't go down the street, that I can't do this, I can't do that? And then here's where I think he stuck his foot in his mouth. He said, that's exactly right. She said, are you telling me that you can arrest me if I do that? And he said, well, I'm telling you that you'd be violating the law. Well, to me, what's the difference, right? But my point is, this is inside the Australian culture. It's okay to have your own culture in a larger culture, but your culture cannot disrupt the laws or the freedoms of people that are in that culture already, meaning Australian. By the way, this was a white journalist, a white female journalist, and this was a white police officer and a police official. So that makes it even worse, because if a commander or a captain doesn't understand what the Bill of Rights or the constitutional freedoms are in Australia, then nobody should.
You know, I think that one of the things that the officer was probably trying to do, and not being real familiar with Australian laws, was to protect her, because he knew that she was in danger going in those areas. And that should never be allowed to be the case, that you have an area of the country where people can't go because they are in danger because of another culture's Sharia law.
Oh, that's exactly right. And listen, I don't disagree with you at all. We've both been in law enforcement. I don't disagree with you at all that he should be concerned about a white lady going into a very heavily Muslim area. All right, sure, you would be concerned. However, that's the difference. Instead of threatening her with arrest, instead of threatening her civil rights, how about protecting her civil rights and just going with her? Okay.
Well,
how about that?
How about these areas not being allowed in the first place?
Well, I agree with you.
And, you know, Australia is a country that just recently has had a number of incidents with terrorist Muslim acts happening against them. And it just seems like this is more and more. And the thing is, Ron, that bothers me, and I'm just bringing it back to the United States, is they want to do the same thing in the United States. The Muslims are free to go in any area of the United States, but they want to make areas where we are not free to go into their areas. That is not wrong. And that's what we're talking about, these cultural differences. You don't take a country like America and make your own little country within it where nobody else can go. And it's the same thing, you know, with Cory Booker saying that he wants to have reparations. We are dividing our people so much right now with all these different...
It's just divisive, all right? And I think that's where you're going with this.
With all of these things that we are doing, that we are trying to make everybody different instead of everybody... I don't want everybody to be the same, but we can't have all of these different classes of people in all of these different ways that... Just everybody has to be against each other instead of for each other.
And I agree with you. And I think, you know, you and I have traveled so much, not only in the United States, but internationally. Here's my point, and I think you'd agree with me. We're not saying you can't have your little enclaves where you have your culture. You know, for instance, how many little Italys do we have in the United States? How many little Saigons in Japantowns?
But they welcome us.
But that's the difference. Exactly. The difference is that everybody wants to go to Little Italy. Everyone wants to go to Japantown. Everybody wants to go to Chinatown. Everybody wants to go to, you know, the place where the Irish hang out, and Germantown. I mean, heck, in where we live in the hill country in Texas, this was all settled by Germans. So all the towns are German. You know, who doesn't want to go to New Braunfels? Who doesn't want to go to Fredericksburg? You know, all of these different areas. And every culture, every person is welcomed. But that's not what you get in these no-go zones. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Well, it is. It separates us instead of keeps us together. And that's what I don't want to see in America. And we should be afraid of that, because then, you know, what we end up with eventually is some sort of a civil war amongst us because people are so completely right. different instead of all being on the same page.
Exactly. And, you know, we had a coffee conversation 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were talking about the brand new Muslim patrol units that were driving around in the city of New York, and they looked just like New York Police Department cars. The same color yes. scheme, the same emblems on them, except that there's, Arabic writing on the side of the car, but it says Muslim Police Patrols. And the Muslims who are in those vehicles, the so-called security patrol officers, are dressed a lot like NYPD officers. And what do you think they're doing there? Okay, why did the city of New York even allow it? Okay, because there is confusion and it's intimidation. And we shouldn't have anything like that in the United States.
No,
but anyway.
Nor should we have our congressperson, Ilhan Omar, calling other people in our government white nationalists. I mean, all it is a divide, and that's all that they're trying to do is separate people.
Well, you know what I'm going to do as a criminologist? This really gave me an idea, and hopefully I'll have some time to be able to do this, but I'm going to reach out to my colleagues across the nation in law enforcement and ask them, hey, look, do you have no-go zones in your city? Because if they do, I'd like to visit a couple of them, and I'd like to talk with the police officers there, and I'd like to find out, are you handcuffed? Can you not go into those areas? Is this an area that you're not allowed to go in, or you can't go in, or you're worried about going into these areas, and you can't do law enforcement in those areas? And I'm thinking, if they have it in Australia, we sure as heck probably have it in the United States.
Well, we probably do, and there's a couple states in particular that probably are going in that direction. So, yeah.
Well, let me switch it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about, hey, we're 19 months before the 2020 elections for presidents and congresspeople and senators. And I don't know, I'm kind of noticing that the Democrats have no plan.
Well, they don't have a plan.
At least enough to get somebody elected to president.
Yeah, you know, they're kind of, well, first of all, they're on the very progressive side this time, but I'm not sure that America wants to go in that direction. I think that Nancy Pelosi is trying to bring them back a little bit more to the middle, and that's not necessarily working, but these presidential candidates of, I don't know how many we've got now.
14.
Is it 14? I 14? Thought it was 16 to 20 now. I don't know.
Well, I think it's at least 14. I heard yesterday it was 14, but then Joe Biden is going to, you know, make an announcement, they're saying, pretty soon. I think there's one or two other people that are going to make an announcement. I think in the 2016 elections, didn't we have like 17 Republican candidates?
We did, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think we've ever seen in our lifetime so many candidates running for the presidency. And, I mean, you know, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
And we'll see where it goes. But here's at least what I'm seeing. It's all anti-Trump. Okay, so this is your platform. Okay, it's all anti-Trump. It's all open borders, right? It's all Green New Deal. It's all climate change. It's all this. And here's what I'm seeing: the whole anti-President Trump thing is not working, because now with the Mueller report and Attorney General Barr's short synopsis report, guess what? That whole Mueller investigation caved in, like we knew. No collusion, no evidence of anything, no more indictments. The indictments that they had, which were, I think, 20 indictments, were for extremely low-key things like, you know, lying to Congress or misrepresenting something. And none of that had anything to do with Trump's campaign.
No,
or collusion right. Or associating with him. So that, you know, throw that baby out with the bathwater. The Green New Deal thing that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came up with all the media blitz on that, that went absolutely nowhere, because when the Republicans forced the Democrats to put it out in the House for a vote, even the Democrats voted present. So that went in the toilet.
Well, that would cost each American $600,000
a piece, right? Apiece. Because it was something right. like, what, $20 to $30 trillion dollars for that?
Just a ridiculous.
So what aren't they talking about? Jobs, building up infrastructure in the United States.
Education.
Education, changing our immigration laws, protecting our borders.
Better health care.
They're not talking about trade. You know, they're not talking about things that affect the average American like you and me. What
do they
have?
They don't understand those things. And it is just an against Trump type of thing. And it's also what can I give you free type of conversation. Is, you know, that education should be free, that Medicare for all, which I can tell you, as somebody on Medicare, that it is not all it's cracked up to be, and we absolutely don't want that. And I'll have to tell you, I'm going to tell you a quick story, Ron. So I went I regularly go to the dermatologist. I went to the dermatologist, but I had to find a new dermatologist. Had a very difficult time finding a doctor that would take Medicare. Very, very, very difficult time. So I finally found one and went in and just, you know, had the usual exam that they do, and had her freeze a little spot that I wanted taken care of. And that was it. I'm out of there. All's good. And I get the paperwork, and it says that the total bill was something like $345. And here it says, well, here's what you owe. You don't owe anything, which is great for me. Okay, here is what the doctor got paid on that visit, was under $10. And the rest, I don't know where the rest of that money goes. I don't know if some goes to Blue Shield or for administration. I don't know if some goes to Medicare for administration. I don't know where that money goes, but that doctor got $10. And now I see clearly why doctors don't want to take Medicare.
You know, Linda, that's just amazing. I can't believe that when you see a bill that says $320 and the doctor only gets $10, I now understand why it's so hard for us to find doctors out here in Texas to take Medicare. Who would want to take Medicare when they spend that much time with you and they get $10 for it?
Well, and you have so much administration in between me, the patient, and the doctor, that's where the money goes. And The other thing is that on Medicare, we have paid into that our whole life, and we still pay almost as much, probably only 25% less, 20 to 25% less than we paid having full insurance. So I'm sorry, it's not all it's cracked up to be. And, you know, you're talking about putting that many more people on this system. It will break, and nobody would want to be a doctor at those kinds of fees.
Well, you know, that's the same thing with Social Security. But what worries me is as we get older, just like everybody else that gets older, we're going to have more needs. Okay, so we're going to have more medical needs. And if we already now have problems where we can't find doctors to help us, and I know we go back and forth to California all the time, because we still have businesses there as well as Texas. That's where, for instance, our dentist is, mm-hmm. and that's where our real doctors are out in California. But if we get sick out here in Texas, you know, that's going to be a real problem. As a matter of fact, the dentist that we like the best is in Mexico, in Puerto Vallarta.
Okay, well, we can still go there.
Well, of course we do, and we're paying a third of what we pay in the States.
But I want to go back to what you're talking about the Democrats having really nothing to offer the American people, and I can't think of a thing that they are offering to the American people. But I want to contrast that to what I see, just me as a person see as President Trump having brought to the table for the American people. He brought jobs by the gazillions. He brought billions and billions of dollars of money back from offshore to America, which he never, you never hear about, you never get credit
by
for.
Giving the tax incentives to the corporations.
He has done wonders for the trade in this country. Some people would disagree, but his path to bettering trade relations with China and Mexico and Canada are right on track, in my opinion, as a business person. He has been trying to help with the border. He has increased the economy in the country in every which way that you can imagine. He's increased the stock market. I mean, you name the measure, and he's done it well. What does he bring for us in 2020? More of the same. More things to be done for the American people, as opposed to the Democrats who have nothing to offer us.
Well, you know, they've got a ways to go, and I guess we're just going to have to find out how their platform evolves. But so far, I see absolutely nothing. I see a lot of empty rhetoric that even people in their own party don't support. So let's have that second cup of coffee.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, you know, Linda, I'm seeing that more states are making decisions to legalize marijuana, and I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes and talk about that because I think it's a huge mistake.
Oh, I do as well. I mean, for so many reasons, the first being that marijuana today is 30 times stronger than it was back in our day.
Yeah, at least that much. You know, the other thing is that once you legalize it, you have exponentially increased the illegal growers of marijuana. You know, let me give you a great example. In the state of California, they're estimating as of this day that there are over 58,000 illegal marijuana farms in the state of California. 58,000.
Well, Governor Gavin Newsom brought in the National Guard, President Trump's National Guard, to help with that problem of the illegal marijuana fields in California.
Well, what's happening is what they're finding is that now the marijuana with the dispensaries is coming in all different forms. They're doing gummy bear marijuana. They're doing cookies. Of course, they've always done cookies. But all sorts of forms of edible marijuana, but at this high-grade marijuana, as you've indicated many, many, many more times, the THC content than what we've seen before. But what's happening, like in California and these other states like Colorado, they just did some research on Colorado, is that the state, not only with its regular marijuana farms, but with its illegal marijuana farms, is producing many more times the marijuana that Coloradans could possibly consume. And it's the same thing with California. So what's happening is that people from other states are coming in to Colorado and buying the illegal marijuana because there's so much of it there that the people that are growing it illegally can undercut the people that have the dispensaries, because guess what? There's almost zero overhead. You know, they don't have to pay. The people that grow it illegally don't have to pay for stores. They don't have to pay for business licenses. They're not paying the excessive taxes.
Sure.
And, you know, all of that stuff, and store employees and stuff. They're just doing, you know, hand-to-hand sales or bulk sales and no taxation at all, right? So no overhead except for growing it.
Well, here's the thing about marijuana that really scares me, and it's so interesting that people are in total denial about this, but direct associations have been made between the frequency of marijuana use and the higher THC potency that we now have and mental health issues.
Oh,
like
for sure.
Psychosis,
for sure.
Depression, anxiety, suicidal tendencies. People are driving around using this. People are being your employees while they are using this. And by the way, when you stop using marijuana, it takes 28 days for it to get out of your system. So people that are your employees, their mind is in a more depressed state while they're working for you, and they're not as alert. There are so many repercussions to this. And I understand that it has some medicinal qualities that are good and benefit some people. But the widespread use of this grade of marijuana, I think, is one of the worst things that we've ever done to legalize in this country.
Well, let me talk about a couple of things. Number one, there is a synthetic marijuana called Marinol that doesn't have the euphoric effects of marijuana. Okay, so if you have glaucoma, if you've got some form of cancer, if you've got some form of disease or disability where you are smoking dope, smoking weed, in order to take care of the effects of having that disease, you can get that through Marinol. So let's not kid each other, all right? People that are smoking weed to get high, okay? They're not smoking weed because they've got some sort of disease or something like that. But the other thing, I want to just bring this up, is especially in the state of California, in the state of Colorado, because they've done some research. I don't know if California or any of these other states have done research, but Colorado have definitely done research, and they came out with a study 2 years ago about the increase of traffic fatalities where they do the autopsies and they find the presence of THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, the active ingredient, the euphoric ingredient in marijuana, in their systems. And so once they legalized marijuana, their DUI accidents and fatalities went through the roof. And I'll bet you that's every other state that has legalized marijuana.
Well, and marijuana directly affects the brain. I mean, especially the parts of the brain that are responsible for memory and learning and attention and reaction time, which goes to your point about the vehicle accidents. And it also affects the cognitive part of the brain that you use for studying and work. And those types of things. And when you have adolescents using it, their brains are not fully developed yet. So it has even more impact.
Yeah.
And they're still studying what the impact, the long-term impact is on the brain of people whose brains are not completely developed, as in our adolescents. So there's nothing good that can be said of this other than a controlled usage for some medicinal purposes for people in pain and that type of a scenario. But as we've done and as has been shown, with all of these illegal farms and in California and other places, the marijuana is not staying in California. It's going to all other states.
Correct.
So the drug dealers are just saying, wow, this is cool. We can grow this over here and we can spread it throughout the United States to places where it's still illegal.
Well, you know, and I'm going to speculate a little bit here, but let's say you're a marijuana grower and you're growing illegally and they arrest you for that. It would seem to me that when you're making your case in court, you can say, well, look, all I did was grow it illegally. All I did was not pay taxes for it, okay? And then, you know, in a quote, it's a victimless crime the way it's represented. And look, this is just an economic crime because I'm trying to get around paying taxes and fees. And so these people that are growing high-grade marijuana, you know, are gonna basically kind of get off the hook. You know, it's this entire thing about the marijuana is not good. Now, I'm sure some people will argue with me, but you and I have seen it as law enforcement officers. It is a gateway drug. Okay, and let me give you a great example. They recently did, the Center for Disease Control, just recently, within the last month, did some research, and they found that 92% of opioid users started with marijuana. Okay, so please don't tell me that marijuana is not a gateway drug.
Yeah, they're 2.6 times more likely to abuse prescription opioids also.
Yeah, and at these higher levels, it's just kind of like going, it's like when you go to Starbucks and you get a cup of coffee at Starbucks and you're not used to Starbucks coffee, right? You get that zoom, right? Because the caffeine content is so much higher. And I, you know, sorry, Starbucks, it's just my personal opinion, but you really caffeinate your coffees and get people addicted to the level of caffeine, because when you go over to Dunkin' Donuts or you go over to McDonald's and you get that coffee, you go, wow, I don't get the zoom that I get when I'm going to Starbucks. And that's why you have these long lines at Starbucks, but Dunkin' Donuts, not so much.
Well, a couple more facts is that in Colorado, since they've had more time to study this, the toxicology reports are showing that the percentage of adolescent suicide victims have more, they're testing more positive for marijuana. That's increased. And also the suicide attempts. Okay, but they did a 50-year study, which is impressive, that found that marijuana use is linked to a 7-fold greater odds of subsequent violent crime and also the increased risk of developing psychosis 4-fold. That's a huge, long time to do a study and get those kind of facts and figures. We need to pay attention to those.
Yeah, I don't think you can argue that. And of course, you know, of all the death cases and the serious injury cases that I work in my practice, I always see a link to the use of marijuana. I mean, I can't tell you how many autopsy reports that I look at. And I just looked at one just day before yesterday. And here we go. We had a high THC content. And, you know, I tell the medical examiners, when I review their autopsy reports, I said, did you do a secondary screening for synthetic cannabinoids like bath salts, K2, and spice? And a lot of times they don't. But when I see a high THC content in an autopsy toxicology report, I know that there's a linkage there, and they're smoking that high-grade marijuana. Well, listen, let me change it up, and I want to talk about Trump's tax records,
okay?
Because the Democrats, that's the new thing, okay? Well, actually, the new thing is the old thing. The new old thing, right. So you know, they have been wanting to get Trump's tax returns ever since he was a candidate for the presidency. And now that, you know, Mueller report just basically is getting flushed down the toilet and that's going to go away. Here they are back on tax returns for President Trump. Well, number one, I don't think they're going to get them because it sets a horrible precedent. But you know what I was thinking, Linda? Those aren't the tax returns I want to see. You know the tax, because I know that he's a multi-billionaire. There's the tax returns that I want to see, and I think the American people would see, and I just want to try it out on you. How about the tax returns of politicians in the Congress and in the Senate that started out with not very much money, but as they've been in the Senate and in the Congress, now they're turning into multimillionaires, and the only job they have is being a senator or a congressperson. Tell me how that happens.
Well, I totally agree with you. That would be phenomenal. And I'd even go a step further. I want to see their immediate family's tax returns, because a lot of these politicians put their family members on exorbitant payrolls and they funnel money that way. There's all kinds of things. In fact, if Joe Biden goes ahead and runs for president, I want to see what he did in getting all that money from overseas when he was vice president.
And for his son that right. got, what, a couple of billion-dollar contract crazy. Out of, what, the Chinese?
I don't remember.
And Nancy Pelosi, does not her brother or her son, didn't he get a contract for about $785 million for solar energy? And you know, here's the three that I want to watch. Now, not much going on right now, okay, because they all came in poor.
Oh,
okay,
yes.
So
I
AOC
yeah.
and, Tlaib. You know, Tlaib and the
yeah,
other gal.
Omar.
Yeah. Okay, watch those gals. I'm hoping they're going to be one-hit wonders, really, and I'm hoping really seriously that they get voted out after this two-year stint, their first two-year stint in the Congress. I hope they don't come back. But if they do, I want to look at them 4 years from now, after two stints in the Congress, and let's see those tax returns. Let's find out how much money they're making.
Yeah, I agree. You know what, Ron? Let me go backwards just for a second. I want to go back to that marijuana issue just for a second, because there is a place online that people can go to. It's called Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And this organization actually was put together by one of Kennedy's sons. And it's has both Republican and Democrat people in it, but trying to help people understand the facts and figures and resources about marijuana. So Smart Approaches to Marijuana is a great resource for anybody to get facts and figures on exactly what's happening with marijuana.
Well, that's great. Hey, I want to talk about the city of Seattle, Washington.
Oh, okay.
All right. And, you know, I travel all over the place, and I haven't been to Seattle for a while, but I was just recently in Portland. And the city of Seattle, like a lot of other major urban centers, is going through a huge negative metamorphosis with regards to homelessness and crime and addiction and filthy streets. It's sort of like the city of San Francisco with better seafood. Okay. But there's an individual, and I have to say that I am a fan of this young man, and his name is Christopher Rufo. And Christopher is, I would say that he's a patriot, and I would call him one of the unsung heroes of the city of Seattle. This man loves the city of Seattle. His family is there, and he takes a tremendous interest in moving the city of Seattle forward, and yet he sees the plague of homelessness, the addiction, the new progressive left and socialist policies that are ruining the city, which is both a business center and a tourist attraction. And he is so committed to the city of Seattle that he tried to run for city council, but the fascists pushed him out of the race, literally by scaring him and threatening him and his family. So he pulled out. But Chris has done some major research of what is happening to the city of Seattle. And I see it in Portland, and we see it in Los Angeles, and I've seen it in San Diego, and many of these. We saw it in Denver when we were in Denver. These cities are just, you know, auguring in, and homelessness and disease and crime and addiction has really taken over.
Well, they have the largest homeless population over most cities in the whole country.
Per capita.
And they spend over $1 billion just in the Metro City Center trying to battle that problem. The problem has been their city council and their laws are just allowing this to happen. And businesses are unhappy. They're losing things like conventions and things that would come to the city because they don't want to be surrounded by homeless and feces and needles and those types of things.
Well, yeah. And we, you know, you and I really don't even go to San Francisco anymore. And I personally am boycotting the city of San Francisco over the illegal alien killing of that poor young girl, Kate Steinle. So unless I have a court trial or unless I have a case, and I do have a couple of cases currently in San Francisco, I really don't even want to go there. But you know what? Let me just kind of finish up our coffee conversation by mentioning a hero. All right. And so there is a 13-year-old African-American boy, and his name is Dalen Campbell, and he's 13 years old. And the poor kid is undergoing cancer treatments. And during the time he's undergoing cancer treatments, what do you know? Somebody steals his bike. Okay. Well, I don't know whether there was a news article or that cops heard about it on the street, but I personally want to thank the Polk County Sheriff's Department and Sheriff Judd and his men for donating a bicycle, a brand new bicycle, to Dalen Campbell. And I just wanted to mention that, you know, not all superheroes wear capes. Some of them wear khaki and blue and green.
And a lot of those people are superheroes.
But you know, Linda, I want to, speaking of heroes, I want to talk about my favorite hero, and that's you. And once again, you reached the multi-million dollar status for Performagraphic Franchises, one of the top 10 women in the industry in all of Northern North America. And the big one for me, because I can't make it, is, again, you made it to the Inc. 5000, which are the 5,000 fastest-growing businesses in America. And for you, after all these years that you've been doing this job with your franchises, you just continue to knock it, or what do you call it, hit it over the park fence. And so, my God, tremendous congratulations to you for bringing home the bacon, because you know I'm worthless.
Okay. Thank you. And you know what? It's always a team between you and I and everything we do. So I can't take all the credit for anything, because everything that you and I do is a team effort. And speaking of that, let's have a team effort and hit the sack.
That sounds great.